It's February 13th, 2007. You will now enter the conference.
Hey, Bill. Oh. Yeah, you better not do that.
No.
Not going to do that.
Bobby Schwartz will be in tonight.
What?
No, she will. She's on her way right now. But it's not going to be. May not pronounce her name.
Stay in.
Uh-oh, is that what? That must have been when you tried to get in it down. Try 1 and 2. Who have we got in?
Kibble.
Everybody.
Got Kibble, Eric, me, the Creek, Kitty. Dave just came in, of course. We had the very good instructions for you tonight.
Is Bob unlikely to be in tonight, or is this a weekend he works?
I think she's working.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Celeste.
Hi, Celeste. How are you?
Hey, Kit. How are you doing, honey?
You feeling better?
I'm feeling a little better.
Well, good.
Yeah. I'm a little better tonight. Yeah.
Well, good.
So I'm glad you guys got started. I thought Eric was going to call. And that is the information I needed anyway.
Well, good.
He did.
We normally don't get our program started till about 8 o'clock on the nose.
Okay.
And sometimes a little after.
Okay. That's all right. Okay, good. So, I'm in my seat. I'm ready.
So far, there's 7 of us in?
I think. It's not beeping when they come in. They just come on. I think they're letting it go to hell, really. That's why half the systems aren't working on it. Well, Bobby, I'm pretty sure I'm going to go ahead and do the glance thing and just pay the monthly fee for my customers anyway. And since it's a paid-for service, I don't think we're going to have a level of jackass. They would still work the same way.
Yeah.
Except for... I believe they would be able to dial in on an 800 number rather than have to dial long distance.
I see.
What is the password situation? Can you change it every session or whatever?
You can, or you can have just one regular password.
Okay. I need to talk to you about that when we get down to cases.
It would have been beautiful to use that when you were going over the coordinates. Because instead of everybody going to Google Earth, they could have just connected to the, you know, to the screen that you displayed it.
Oh, that would have been nice. Carol, good.
Oh, Carol. Oh, thank
you. Oh, I will. Ken? For some reason, our system isn't beeping when you come in, so we're having a bit of a guessing game if somebody doesn't announce themselves. Well, I came in, and I thought I would have been first. There was somebody in that didn't say anything, didn't answer my call.
So we've got a listener or two.
Boy, have I got an earful for them.
I'm in.
Oh, you're already in.
I've been in, yeah. I've announced myself twice.
You've announced yourself twice, and I haven't heard you once. Well, that's good to show you that I do need hearing aids.
Well, apparently nobody else did either.
I heard you, Pete. Twice.
Okay. Well, maybe I announced myself. Maybe I did.
You know, we used to hear that. I'm hearing things.
It's an RH all scenarios are all
possible.
I hear it.
Bobby?
Yeah.
Bobby, I resemble that.
I know.
Very much so. Yeah, I remember this morning I got up, washed my face, combed my hair, took a good look, because it did not see you somewhere in a cornfield.
Sorry, you're too old to be a child of the corn.
Well, I mean, how deep you comb your hair? With a horse rag.
Thank you.
my water jug and get it filled.
Okay, let me try again. I screwed up.
Now you get rid of the whole thing. And if you don't do that, the damn thing is going to be in another rig. It's like the dirty trick that I taught you. Get someone smoking a cigarette, use the energy out of that cigarette to put a whammy in somebody's ass and make it. Okay, that is a little bit different type of a goal-aim, but it's a goal-aim nevertheless. But before I can get rid of those, I have to be able to get everybody else's house cleaned from the other stuff that is a problem. And that's what we need to do. If you've got any of those that have been dedicated or used in an invocation, candles, pieces of the wax, left, whatever, just get it together and burn it. And when you get rid of those goblins and what have you, then I can take things in front of the old man, and he'll get rid of the other things, the cigarette, et cetera, and what have you. But we had a bunch of those that we have made. And they accumulate, and that's what they used to do with the temple. They would take all the remnants of the waxes and the fats and the oils and everything else that wasn't all done, and the incense, and they were supposed to take it out and burn it, which, since they weren't going inside the veil anyhow, that wasn't happening. And at the second temple, they didn't have an ark to deal with, so they would just set this stuff out to be burnt, and people would pick it up, pieces of wax and incense and what have you that had been put before the Holy of Holies, and they would take it home with them as some kind of a talisman. Then the fun began. When Peter got in, and he was pretty well limited, the priesthood, but he considered the priesthood solely responsible for murdering Emmanuel and John the Baptist, and he was right, they were. They were at on it, it just took the Romans to do the dirty work, but they were the ones that required it. So what he did, once he got the mantle, to get rid of all these goblins and everything, he was going to clean Israel up, because all of the Christians at that time, remember, were out of Judea. They were Jews or Levites, or remnants of the tribe of Benjamin. So he was going to clean up Israel, knowing that they weren't going to get rid of the Romans or anything until he did, and put everybody back to Holy Law. Well, since he was pretty much a baller than he was a thinker, but he had the authority to do it, he went up and threw the chain of command that you have to do with this thing, and got in front of the Most High and asked him to get rid of all of those goings. Well, he did that. Of course, it was about, 25 years after Emmanuel's death, and Peter has been smoldering with this all that time, I guess. Whatever year it was, anyhow, he goes in front of the old man, and the old man graciously said, yep, we'll do that. But tell everybody, you know, clean their temples, clean their houses, and what have you. And of course, there are those that know so much. Well, that backfired, of course. And what happened, the Romans burnt the whole damn city and the temple down. Before they were through with it, they burnt about three-quarters of all the houses and everything in Israel. They even burnt the temple at Qumran, where we know that the Essenes used to be, even though they buried their skulls and everything to take the shit out of the place, put them in the gates and what have you. But the Romans went through and just decimated the place. Burned it all down. Simply because Israel, Judah at that time, was not clean. It kept on to these little deals. They knew more than Peter, the whole nine yards. Just like you see it happening with me. So, we're going to take the time to explain how a goyim is made in one of those one more time. Whenever you make an invocation using anything else as a source of energy, the monsters in the head, the little heat tangents in the back of your mind, all those things are still there. And they infect just as much of your thinking as your immediate direction does. They are still there. They're still to be reckoned with. And they infect this material. So now you've got to go lean. That's what it is. Now, not only does that hinder our speed of getting something done, why does it take that damn long for our stuff to work? It should work instantaneously. Well, let me see if I can lay that one out, then I'll turn things over for the rest of the lecture. If any one of you takes the time and you're out by yourself, and you decide to dissolve a cloud or make one, how long does it take to get results? Dissolving one, you're talking about a minute outside, on the clock, count seconds. Easiest thing in the world to do. There's no interference with it. Because it's just you dissolving a cloud. Now, if we can get all of our people to do the same thing with the same dedication, when we do an invocation, we're going to get the same kind of instantaneous results. Just that simple. But we all have to be on the same page of what we're doing, get the same kind of a vision on it that satisfies us within our understanding, and then hammer the damn thing in unison as a group. We will get some near instantaneous results. It'll take us longer to find out about it than it will to get it done. Because all this hail going across Arabia right now is the end result. The invocations that we've done demanding truth and a follow-up on me taking peace from the earth. There we are. They're that simple to make, and they're that simple to get rid of. I just explained how to do it. Put them in a pile, zero them, burn them. That simple. But you've got to do it. Okay. Now, Channel and Dean have done some research on this thing, and they've got some information we all need brought up to date on, so I will go on mute until I am needed. Channel, you may have the floor.
Thanks, Bobby. Well, I'd like to start off by reading this quote from the January 2011 audience. Son of fire, son of fire, this is the day of the great opening of the ancient secrets which I order to be sealed until the time appointed. Select from among the Akurians, those being true and righteous through the knowers of my great testimony, and reveal unto them as you shall deem appropriate, and teach them first and always, failure is of their own doing. Seek the innate for cause and reason. Delay is the law in action. Removing barriers set long ago that must be overcome with force and apply energies. Have you not already taught them beyond the capability and understanding of the ancient priests and mystery schools? Yet Ta himself is envious of your occurrence, and those in the days of Joseph were not so able. Thanks, Bobby, for getting us the information and allowing this information to be presented. Some of this training is a teaching and learning and process. We've uncovered some information and we're needing to apply it as soon as we can, as we can. No, this is not an exacting science. Why we need to do something is because we've turned up our notches spiritually and our responsibilities to a tremendous degree, and this brings forward other things. This means I don't have all the answers, and it's going to take some time to figure out some questions and answers. It's also one of the things that we'll work towards figuring out and refining the rest of our lives. This isn't something to jackass, and it isn't funny. Accommodation and assimilation of this information into our lives will improve our productivity almost miraculously. And it is something that has affected all of us in some way or another, and in some ways, some good and some bad. By the time we get through this lesson, we'll have a greater handle on why the negatives and failures to us are happening, what to do about them. But we'll also learn things that we can endeavor to be more successful. Our group and individual resources are going to be turned up tremendously. Group and individual responsibilities will be turned up tremendously. Our spiritual applications and success rate will be directly proportional to how well we get it as a group and as well as we do it individually. This training has absolutes on the other end of it, the rewards of success or the stains of failure. There is a middle ground, and it's up to us to make of it what we will. This is a process of virtue, our own. Now, there's some cautions and some warnings here. This is one of the most important and powerful lessons that we can learn. It has a goal together called responsibility and accountability. And by hearing it, individual responsibility and accountability is going to be increased. I recommend if you don't want that responsibility, please leave. However, I should tell you that given the nature of it all, whether or not you leave, you will still be accountable and affected by it as a consequence of everything we're presenting in this lesson. And because we have to, as in must engage as Aquarians, on account of everything that we're doing, and in particular the February 2009 audience, where Bonnie took peace from the world. This is something that needs to be done individually, and this is something that needs to be done as a group. It's very likely that some are going to argue, fight the point, argue and fight against Bobby, argue and fight against the chain of command, argue for the hell of arguing. And what you'll ultimately be doing in this matter is arguing and fighting against the Most High, and you will lose. This is a case that resistance is absolutely and ultimately futile. This may even mean that we'll lose a few people. So be it. Bobby's lost people before. Now what we're going to need to depend on more than ever before is the basic lessons Bobby's taught us. Know what you think. The instructions on how to depend on only you. No trappings whatsoever. And these include some mental pictures. And we're going to need to depend on every instruction Bobby's ever taught us without any additional complexity. Luke 12:27 says, consider the lilies how they grow. They toil not, they spin not. And yet I say unto you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. You want that added complexity? Bobby will certainly give it to you, and then he's going to tap your boiler when you hit the brick wall, which you will. It's only a matter of time. Some of us have or are already experiencing this already. Bobby's instructions are generally very simple and very easy to follow. They are generally not complex, and complexity will create a problem. There won't be any argument whatsoever, and this isn't something that we can push attention around with. The bottom line is that this solution itself comes from the Most High through Bobby, and none of us individually or collectively could have done it. Now, the audience statements to take strict attention to are from the July 2009 and the January 2011 audience. Now, this is not to say that they're not unimportant. All of our Aquarian documents are extremely important. But the words to pay attention to from the July 2009 and the January 2011 audience is to be my people and look to the innate for problems. Our problems are the need for us to tighten to be His people, and we need to look to the innate to solve them. They're not demons that are our problems. Body's got that in control. They're not Nephilim that are our problems. Body's got that too in control. Our problem, individually and collectively, is in the innate. And this is being said in a very gentle and calm tone of voice. This is not something to resist. Resistance of every or any kind is ultimately against the Most High. And those who do so will not be immune from the consequences and or the penalties that comes from doing so. Nor is anyone going to be immune from those of us that get it and are about the business of staying about the business. Now, one of the things that Bobby has talked about many times to everybody is, if you get the chance, watch Forbidden Planet. I hope some people have already seen it, but if you haven't seen it, take the time and watch it. Because anyone who really ultimately violates this instruction is going to bring hell down on themselves for violation, and that includes me. This is very dangerous information. We are warned, and I'm being very clear. I don't know how to stress it or emphasize it anymore. Should there be any infiltrators, which we might have an infiltrator, their consequences will be profoundly severe. Those under the protection of a true and righteous Akurian don't need to worry, but you will eventually have to consider your own accountability and responsibility. The most important things to stay safe are the AED, body and his instructions, our Akurian writings, which are going to have an increased library growth if you read them again, and holy law. Where thought goes, energy follows. It's much easier to pay attention to these things than everything else out there. And remember the instruction from Bobby, all things are a matter of energy, and energy can be and is controlled by thought. Now most of us are having problems in one way or another. This isn't the time to restate them. Each and every one of you know you have a problem that you want to work out through in yourself. The January 2011 audience says what to do about them. So in the process of my own search to solve the problems in my own innate, Don P and I stumbled across something that has tremendous help and was a really very pleasant start. And I'd like for Diane to tell you a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, Tom had visited her son Bo and Allison and the two big buddies wanting to see the kids. And we got into a conversation, they're both very, very intelligent. And he makes a great manager. And I asked him if he had read, you know, a couple pieces of literature, because he seemed to have quite the insight to dealing with people. And he brought up that he had read The Oz Principle. And I was astonished that, you know, I hadn't been familiar with that book for a long time. But it was a pretty cool talk that we had. It's a great book.
Thanks, Diane. And Pete and I have been reading it, too. We got the book, and we've been reading it. And what I would like for Pete to do is introduce some of the things that are kind of important and helped us stumble into some of the things that are in our innate. Pete, you want to go ahead?
Sure. Thank you, Kyle. Okay. Now, without referring completely directly to the book, there are some concepts that come out of it that, you know, when you sit in the back and think about it, you know, you'll know that it does make sense. And we've advocated in one form or another some of these ideas throughout the years. Basically, something to always remember, you know, the power and success or failure and mediocrity are usually derived from thinking. You know, thinking, the group's thinking, in whatever endeavor you do. Now, something that the technique that the book points out that is that a thin line separates failure, success, greatness from mediocrity. And reference I'll be using, the terms I'll be using are above the line behavior and thinking, which is the manner of thinking and behavior which leads to success and power, versus below the line behavior and thinking, which traps and holds people in a victim-like state and thinking and behavior, and condemns them to mediocrity so long as the thinking and behavior prevails within. When poor performance or unsatisfactory results occur, people tend to begin finger-pointing, forming excuses, rationalizing, justifying, instead of doing something to alleviate the situation. Kind of reminds me of a line from a movie I saw many years ago in the early 90s called Rising Sun, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase one of the lines that stuck out in my mind. When a fuck-up occurs, unsuccessful people tend to worry about fixing the blame, fixing the blame on somebody, and who to find fault with, rather than putting their energies into fixing the fuck-up. Folks turn around and claim that they are victims of circumstances, that events are completely out of their control, they shouldn't be blamed for their current problem. It's always something or someone else, never themselves. Truly, however, those who continue to be a victim never have control over their lives. Now here's where we look at what kind of thinking behavior is above the line, that is, not being a victim, versus below the line, thinking and behavior. And remember, this is a line that separates failure and success. Above the line, accountability is the key to getting above the line and getting out of being a victim. There are certain steps to achieving accountability which one can follow to avoid becoming the victim, take control of themselves, and to avoid continuing to be the victim. These steps are in a specific order. First step is called see it, and that means to acknowledge it is a problem to begin with. Surprised how many people kind of bury their head in the sand and never acknowledge a problem. Next comes own it. That is to assume responsibility for the issue and the eventual results of attempting to resolve it. The third step is called solve it. That is to formulate and develop solutions to the problem. And then finally, to do it. And that's to put into motion those solutions you formulated. And you see there's power in these steps. Taking these steps puts you back into control instead of being controlled. Whether it be by circumstances or whether it be controlled by others. Okay, so what constitutes below the line thinking and behavior? Below the line is where the self-professed victims play the blame game. Crippling attitudes are prevalent, such as wait and see, state of confusion, and a request, just tell me what to do. You've heard also this one before, it's not my job. Ignore or deny that there's even a problem. Finger pointing, or scrambling or worrying about covering your tail. When these behaviors are rampant, that's the lower line behavior. Now, I'm sure you've probably seen many, many organizations that engage in this kind of behavior. I see it in government when I work there a lot. Now, is government successful? I think we can agree it's not. Though the majority of people who are below the line are weak in accountability, this does not mean that generally accountable individuals are exempt from falling below the line. They do slip every now and then. The only difference is they see this and they know how to get out of the rut. Okay, so individuals and organizations that are below the line tend to language in self-pity, so they get trapped into the I am a victim mindset and find it hard to break free from that vicious cycle. Accountability offers a very simple choice to make, albeit a difficult one to act upon. You either get stuck or you get results. But bear in mind, most people fail to realize that they have that power within them and the ball is in their court. So the first step to accountability accountability is recognizing the problem. It takes tremendous courage to admit that you're stuck in a difficult situation. Most people fail to view the reality the way it is because they choose to ignore it, or they accept the situation as a status quo and go along with it. And how often do we see a lot of programming to continue fomenting that too? So I'll get into that a little bit later. Okay, so to start the march up the steps to accountability, you need to muster the courage to recognize when you fall below the line. Realize that remaining below the line not only ignores the real problem, but leads to increasingly poor results, and acknowledge and accept reality as the first step towards taking accountability. All these constitute the see it part of the accountability. So once you take that first crucial step to see it, you can go on to the next step, and that is owning it. You have to have the heart to own that circumstance you recognize in the see it step, as well as the results that will come from the course of action you plan to take. Okay, so once you own it, following it is that next step. Key to that is ask yourself, what else can I do to rise above my circumstance and achieve the results I want? That is the question you continually ask yourself when you find yourself stuck in a difficult or stubborn situation. Okay, so apart from creating those solutions, solving it also involves having enough foresight to determine the worst possible scenario that can happen, being prepared to battle it head on. You may run into roadblocks. Okay, take that accountability step. Okay, now having the solutions is just not enough if you neglect the practical application. You can't do it unless you make yourself accountable not only for immediate circumstances, but also for future accomplishments. With this, you empower yourself as well as any association or group that you may be a part of. Now, it is easy to be pulled back below the line, particularly if you don't accept a full accountability for this situation in the future. Now, a lot of people are afraid to become accountable because they fear the risks associated with it. However, know that without taking that big leap, you never get anywhere. Rewards have risks that are also inherent with it. Now, I want to kind of quote a person I once heard in an interview on a radio recently that said, success does not go to the timid. Remember that. Now, I just want to add this. I haven't really prepared this, but it was a thought that occurred to me. There are those who profit off of the masses' victimization circle and cycle. I mean, the whole practice of personal injury law is predicated on that. Now, just imagine if people didn't take that whole blame the world, I'm a victim approach, start suing everybody, what would happen in our economy. Okay, so, but there are people getting rich off of victims, and off of, or should I say, exploiting victims for their own benefits. Okay, well, that's essentially the essence of what's the above the line and below the line features that are big towards determining ultimate success or failure. So I'll turn it back over to Sean.
Thanks, honey. And somebody's not on mute. Sean, I just came off of mute. Would you give me that title of the book again, please?
It's called The Oz Principle.
But now, as you can tell, Diane, Pete, and I have really been studying this, and I'd really like for Diane to bring a little bit on the update on this.
Okay. I read this book, I won't tell you how many years ago. But anyways, I will say it's probably the book that kept me from putting a bullet in my brain. I don't know if some of you know where I came from. It helped me sort through all the programming and recognize all the programming, and now I see, reading it again, and they have added more information to the book. All the more programming I'm finding I still have that's keeping me, has kept me from discovering, you know, myself, my innate. But it's a real eye-opener to read. I think you just covered chapter 2, right? That was just chapter 2?
That was just chapter 2, correct.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing about the book is it opens your eyes. And I use these principles, and some of the principles I've been using have been a part of me. And I use them at work, you know, when I'm dealing with other people, and I'm trying to get them to perform. And it all starts with me, is what this is about, you know, your success. It's got to start with you. And it's an eye-opener. So that's pretty much all I have to say. If you get a chance to read this book, I would definitely recommend it.
Thanks, Diane. Well, some of the rest of the story has also come out of a few conversations that I had with Eric, and one in particular that showed me that I was really looking on the right track with respect to getting into the innate and above the line, below the line behavior, was a story of something that happened with Eric over his son Jesse. And Eric, I'd really like for you to tell that story.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know what it is, but yeah, can everybody hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Well, we had a scenario that where Jesse called me from school. That's just right around, you know, when school gets out, and he called me and said, "Dad, I have detention." And normally when a parent gets that call, they're immediately kind of trained into what did you do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse replied, "Well, Dad, I didn't do anything wrong. I've been late several times to school, and so they're having me serve 3 days in detention." Well, then, usually the parent would say, you know, in more cases than not, they would blame their child for being late or, you know, maybe getting a ride from a friend or not making the bus on time or whatever. But in our case, I'm a single father. I've got two boys. My son's school starts his first bell. Jesse's is at like 7:45 in the morning. James, on the other hand, my younger son is 13. Is in the middle school. Their first bell doesn't even ring until like 8:40. And where we live is about 2 miles away from both of their schools, so it's not really that far. But because of the districting and the bus schedules, and I actually pay for the bus for both of them. But in the morning time, in order for them to catch the bus, they have to get up at like 5 in the morning, walk for like an entire mile, wait for the bus, then finally get to school at whatever time. But it basically takes 2 hours away from them in the morning time. Now, I know, I'm not like really feeling sorry for them or that or anything, because I knocked when I grew up, I had to do worse. You know, I've heard the stories from my mom walking 10 miles to school in the snow. So, but as a father, I just thought, well, I'm going to discipline myself to get up with the boys and take them to school, and I'll let them ride the bus home. And then that would give me discipline to get into my office every morning, no fail, at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because I run my own business, and it's very easy for me to not. You know, it's easy for me to get up later if the kids are already going to school and hitting the bus. But I just looked at it as a disciplinary thing for me. So when Jesse called me and said that he was given detention over him being late for school, well, suddenly that fell on me as it's my fault, because Jesse, knowing the way he was going to school, was with me driving him. And, you know, we live 2 miles away from the school, and every single morning we are out of our house at 7:15 in the morning. Every morning. But what happens is that the traffic pattern going into the school is absolutely horrible. You've got a trailer park that's there where people are trying to pull out of the trailer park. You've got
this highway expressway ramp that goes off onto this main road that takes you to the school. And the biggest reason why the traffic backs up is because there are some rude people, but the majority of them are like kids that are driving to school. They'll just kind of ride in that left lane all the way to where you're supposed to turn right, and then they'll just cut people off. And in some cases, they cause accidents. In some cases, you know, they just back traffic up all the way past the on-ramp onto the highway. So, on the days that Jesse was supposedly late, I knew that, you know, as I'm dropping off at 7:45, that, well, yeah, gosh, he's probably going to be a little bit late. But I took into account, well, fuck, I mean, there's traffic behind me, you know, a quarter of a mile. And so I never really thought of, well, Jesse's late, because I thought, well, guys, you know, this little must know that there's a problem. So I interrupted Jesse. I said, Jesse, you're not going to, you're not staying at the school. Get on the bus and go home. He's like, Dad, you know, no, I got to go. I said, no, you don't. Get on the bus and go home. I will call your school. So he went home. I called the school, left a message, met with their attendance office. Never got a return phone call. The next day, Jesse calls me. Dad, I kind of got in trouble for not going to, I got in trouble for not staying for school. And I had staff. I said, no, you don't. You get on the bus and you go home. I'll call them again. So I did. Called the school again, left a long-winded message asking somebody to call me. The third day, Jesse calls me from school. And this time he's like freaking out. Okay, he's, Dad, I've got to stay. I said, Jesse, I know they're telling you to stay, but get your bums on the bus and I'll take care of it. So I ended up, after he hung up the phone, I called the school and let the message on the principal's answer machine. And really, the message really was a long winded. It was just kind of one of those of, you know, I understand you guys give my son attention. He's an honor roll student. He's been an honor roll student, you know, since he's been there. And I need to talk to somebody about, you know, why you're punishing my son. And so it really wasn't getting into any kind of detail. Well, when I arrived home that night, it was a Friday night, Jesse had this printout from school where they gave it to him that depicted, you know, his tardiness and whatnot from his first period. And all of it was just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, oh, we're talking like a minute late or something like this, you know, like 7 or 8 times. And, I mean, they really painted an ugly picture of Jesse's timely arrival to school. In my mind, I'm looking at it, and it took me about, I don't know, half a second before I ripped this thing up in front of Jesse and threw it in the garbage can. And Jesse's profusely looking at me going, oh my God, Dad, what are you doing? You're supposed to sign that. I said, no, I'm not signing it. In fact, I'm going to, if your principal doesn't call me tomorrow, I'm going down there. So the Monday came and Jesse went to school. And as soon as I got into my office, my phone rang. And it was the principal of the school. And he wanted to have a chat with me, is how he put it. I said, yeah, I'm Jesse's father. How can I help you? He says, well, you know, I've got this message from you needing to talk to me about your son staying for detention. I said, yeah, you know, I've been calling for the last 3 days. Nobody's returned my phone call. I saw some chicken scratch you guys sent home on Friday, which I immediately ripped up and threw away. And Jesse freaked out because he said I was supposed to sign it, but I'm not signing it. And I'm really offended that you would take an honor roll student and punish him in the manner in which you're doing it. Now, I said, before we get any further, under normal circumstances, I would probably look at the situation and I would blame my son, okay? I would say, what are you doing that's causing you to be late? The problem is that I'm a small business owner here in Aptos, and I've made a choice to drive my kids to school every morning as a disciplinary thing for me to get to work on that. And I'm the one dropping Jesse off every day, so I know that it's not the bus being late. I know it's not him and his friends. Hello? Do you hear me?
I can hear you.
Let me ask you.
What's up?
What's up, Jesse? You guys hear that busy sound?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where is it?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Okay, I'm gonna hang up and call back. Or when
is Andrea still with you? Andrea, are you still there?
Every day. And I said, sir, you know, I live 2 miles from your school. Less than 2 miles from that school. I get up and I'm out of my house every day at 7:15. And, you know, to be stuck in traffic from 7:15 to 7:45 is absolutely horrible. And to see the abuse of some of these drivers going into that school, some of those unthoughtful kids cutting in front of people, and just seeing that traffic pattern is just absolutely not the right way to start the day, okay? And I always do my best to get him there, you know, on time, and way in advance of that. And, you know, quite frankly, there's nothing else that I can do to get him there within your parameters. And the angel immediately stopped me and said, well, Mr. Hendrick, you need to leave at 7 o'clock in the morning then. I said, well, sir, I disagree with you. I disagree, because here's my problem. You know, I have a junior high student that I take to school, that his school doesn't even start till, you know, 8:30, before the first bell rings. And if I leave at 7 o'clock, sure, yeah, I'm going to beat all that traffic, probably, because, you know, that's the way it is. But what happens is then I'm end up dropping my son off in the junior high school parking lot, where he's standing there by himself before anybody gets there for probably 45 minutes. And, you know, I'm not going to drop my kid off in a parking lot, unattended, and then worry in the back of my head that, you know, there's some funny stuff going on. And it's junior high school, and these days, you know, it starts a lot younger than it did, you know, a while back. So, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I think that what you should do is you should have one of your parents or one of your principal, or, you know, your staff out on the street watching the behavior coming into the parking lot, and those that violate, write the license plate numbers down and don't let them have school driving privileges. Period. That's what I think you should do. And so he responded with, we don't have the money. I said, well, that's not my problem. I'm paying you guys money. That's not my problem. He said, okay, Mr. Hazard, I'm going to let you go this time. I said, no, you got it all wrong. Definitely I'm not going to be punished this time, and really, for the rest of the school year, if you ever try to do this again, then you are going to have to take me to your school board, where I can talk to them. And when we hang the phone up today, I'm going to promise you something. I'm going to be more diligent with my camera phone, and I'm going to start taking pictures of this shit, okay? And when I see this stuff happening, I'm going to start taking pictures of this stuff, and I'm going to email them to you every day. And if I were you, I would get on your school intercom system, and I would announce to your entire school that behavior coming into the school is going to be looked at hard, and those that are caught being unthoughtful, really getting into that parking lot, will lose their access onto that parking lot in the morning. But I'm going to say this again, Principal. Man, I think his name is Chris. You are not going to punish my son. And I'm going to end this phone call by telling you that, you know, imagine the kids that were behind me that have gotten in trouble where their parents are abusive. And they called home, and the parent is put out because they have to leave work to come pick their kid up at school. let's say they go to school, they pick Johnny up, and Johnny gets home with his mom and dad, and Johnny gets his ass beat because he did something wrong by heavy detention. And so I think that you should look at this very seriously and take care of the problem. Have a nice day. That's it. Now, I didn't really thought that that story was really anything to talk about, but, you know, I guess the thing that, if I was to pull anything from it is, don't be a victim. You know, do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, and if things are out of your control, don't be the victim. And don't allow anybody else to put you into that victim mode.
Yeah, no, Eric, you're not. What was the result of the phone call? I don't need to put you on the spot, but you tell a story, you tell us what you did, which is excellent. However, what was the result?
Well, the result was Jesse didn't get detention. What I also did, I kind of, without saying anything to the principal of the school, I've been leaving at about 10 after now, okay? But nobody told me to do that. I just kind of thought, okay, let me try. Let me see if this at least takes care of some of my stress level. I didn't do it for the school as much as me. I'm telling you, that traffic pattern sucks more than a queer convention. So, and in doing that, you know, it's kind of a happy medium to where there's been absolutely no incidents whatsoever. But what's funny is that there have been patrol cars, like there's been like highway patrol cars on the road now, and Jesse told me they made an overhead announcement in this school. So,
super.
That's good.
Super. No, see, that's what happens when you take a stand. And when you take a stand and be accountable, and even if it's not your fault, you're not pointing fingers, but you're finding a solution, that's what happens. And I used to work for a man way back in the day, and like Diane, I ain't telling my age. I'm probably older than Bobby, but that's okay. But I had a great boss, a little short, 5-foot-tall boss, working at the bank. It was an Imperial Bank. And working at that bank wasn't fun because it was in Watts. And if you know Watts, that's deep in the heart of the ghetto. However, even though we had certain rules for working in the ghetto, he had certain rules for walking into his office. And if you asked him, if you said to him, do you have a minute? Any time you want his watch, your minute is up, get out. If you say you have a problem, do not come into my office with a problem unless you have a solution. And that solution that you would have to come up with, he could yay or nay it. But most of the time you say, yeah, if you think that's going to work, go for it. So that is being accountable for what you're working on. That's being accountable for what you're doing. Same instance as Eric. He took care of that traffic problem really well. And when you live in that venue, it works like a goddamn charm. So that, if you get a call, even if you get a call from Bobby and he says, I want you to do something for me, and we all had it. If you tell him, I can get it done by this day, if there's a few days in between, he'll agree to that. But if you say, well, gee, I got to figure out what this is and all that stuff, that is not necessary. He does not have to hear that. But if you tell him, I need 2 weeks to do it, I need a week, I need a couple of days, that's all he needs to hear. And then you're accountable for your time, you get it done, and bam, no recourse. It works beautifully.
Well, getting back to the purpose of this instruction, this is to tie into some of the stuff that we need to very much look at with respect to getting inside the innate. Okay, well, now, getting inside the innate is one thing, but one of the things that, like Pete illustrated, Diane, and everything else is some of the things that are a little bit of the ingredients that really make it a little bit hard to get into the innate. And what we're going to introduce in a little bit more refined way is what a golem is. Now, a golem is pronounced either a golem, and it's spelled G-O-L-E-M, and it's either golem or golem. It is a creature that can do a job and is designed to do a job. For all intents and purposes, it is the same type of thing that is demonstrated in Forbidden Planet. The monsters of the film are Hollywoodized goings. It is also the reason that Bobby has decided that we all watch Forbidden Planet. Here is another pretty good movie that kind of illustrates the same type of example. Anyway, golems can be created to do a job by the most intelligent and the most idiotic. Anyone and everyone should remember Bobby's statement of mental pictures. You know, mental pictures of the most idiotic or the most brilliant still do something. Well, golems are the same thing. They can be created by the most idiotic and they'll do a job. And they will do the job they're designed to do. The characteristics of a golem are that it has a function, and that function behaves like life without a soul. History discusses that as though they're made of twigs, grass, mud, and clay, but that's not the only way they can be made. A corporation is a golem and is an example. Consider a corporation can vote, it can grow, it can become bigger, it can buy, sell, own property, pay taxes, etc. Fire in and of itself is not necessarily a golem, but consider fire has a life, doesn't have a soul. It consumes, eats, breathes, it can grow and become bigger, and it won't stop until unless it has nothing else to consume or is deliberately stopped. Left to its own, it burns out. Its job is done. But there are many golems on the planet, and they've been endowed to work whether there are demons or nephilims directly involved. They can be, exist, and work independent of direct oversight by their creators. In fact, were we to eliminate all of the demonic and nephilim influence today, we would not fix and solve the problem. The golems would still be there, and the problem could be very likely even a bigger problem as a result. Truth is, they will be there until and unless we do something about them. Consider the corporations that exist today, even though their creators are dead. Hopefully this makes a little bit of sense with respect to the Fed, socialism. How about those who will remain hallelujah half-wits? Islam? Islamic idiots? Now, some time ago, Bobby and I were out and about, and we'd been doing something and had quite the day. He and I went to India Kitchen for lunch, and I also had some of his beer, as I usually do. On the way home, we stopped at Smith's to get some beer. For whatever the reason, the checkout lady wouldn't sell us the beer. She thought I was drunk, too. Neither one of us were. In any case, she was afraid for her job and wouldn't let the sale go through. Bobby and I were really quite stunned as a consequence, and one of the things we talked about at that time was if we could get rid of all tax, all socialists, we'd still have a problem. The problem is all the golems that would still be doing their jobs. Now, the Akkadians are the only humans on the planet that can do anything about the demons, nephilim, and golems because we know about their existence and their plans for humankind. But it's going to have to start with us getting a handle on our own innate and our own golems. Remember, golems have no soul, and they are not of themselves up for punishment for their behavior. Even though their creators are, we're going to have to deal with them, the golems, that is. That brings us to where we are and where we need to go regarding them. The last audience is our crew, the Most High's instruction, and teach them first and always failure is of their own doing. Seek the innate for cause and reason. Delay is the law in action. Removing barriers set long ago that must be overcome with force and applied energies. The Most High is very clear that our enemies are not demons or Nephilim. But we do have an enemy, and it is of our own doing. We've all put quite a few ships, columns in motion, that are going to take some time to change directions. Even the time it takes to skid to a screeching stop. Again, we have a great and profound hope and comfort from the last audience to get inside the innate. There is evidence all over the place that golems are having impact. But our occurring opportunities are across the board are not maximized because of the golems. That's how toxic they are. Clearly, we're not getting the successes as a group that we are capable of, and we are not getting them individually like we should according to our capabilities, and yet, we know within ourselves we are very capable of even greater capability. We always want more, and we can get it, but we must do what we need to do to destroy the golems, doing the ones personally, and those we put together as a team harm us. So holding on to the golems will keep them sustained, and eventually it will consume, just like a fire consumes everything in its path, and it will do so until there's nothing left to consume. Now, not all golems are evil and bad, and the Most High didn't say not to make them. They can serve very effectively and very well, but if you make them, you're going to be responsible for them. Now, remember, golems behave like life, even, but they don't have life or specific human intent of their own. That's why sometimes it's a little hard to trace where the energy is coming from or where it's going to. It'll make a lot of sense with respect to holy laws, why it is a critical need for each and every one of us to get it down in writing. The sooner the better is important, but it's not something to put creation on hold to do. Okay, now that body has removed and taken peace from the earth, golems are going to work better because that is the job they do. And we've been seeing the effect of taking of the peace from the earth is growing at an unprecedented rate. It's where some of our handprints are coming from. Prophecy is being fulfilled. Again, some of that job is golems too. And some of the things that are happening to us are the result of golems. Now remember, body is a neutral. He can do things without creating anything. He's the only anointed that is a neutral, and he must be paid attention to when he says something because it keeps us safe. Each and every one of us has benefited from body, and there's nothing that we would do in turn for it. Of course, we all know he's the anointed. He tells us things in a civil tone of voice, and there's been enough resistance that whether it's one or all of us, it's a problem, and we're going to have problems as a continued result of that. So listen to him as if it is the last time you have a chance. He's given enough of us some instruction of what to do, and sometimes we've seen a little bit of resistance with it, and he's not going to argue anymore. But I can tell you this, if you do, you're headed towards a brick wall and with a full head of steam. Now, golems are created very easily. A lot of what Pete talked about is some of the places that we have a tendency to make them. For those of us who are or who have been smokers, one of the ways we've created golems, for example, is when we've had someone at the other end of the smoke in the cigarette or pissed at. You can create them while sitting on the pot, driving down the road. This energy is often hate energy. hate energy at the other end of the smoke is doing its job perfectly if any are affected directly by targeted hate. And some of us are. If so, you're very likely to have a golem doing the job. If you're smoking that cigarette and thinking of finger pointing, you're blaming someone and fingers could be pointed at you, you're very likely getting the end result of a golem, and most of the time it's one you may do. All of us have been affected in some one way or another, and at some times more so than others, by and as a result of a golem. Jobs, getting paid, or being overwhelmed might have a golem associated. Difficulties with getting things done, no matter what it is, especially when you can't trace the energy, and even when you can trace it to a person, there's very likely a golem associated. Tension, blame, pointing fingers, looking at anything outside of yourself for the reason why. Delays. When things happen, we must take off action, and we have to do it, because if we don't, it's going to continue to cost us. Like Patricia mentioned a minute ago, excuses, frustrations, delay for doing something that we can at the time, or ignoring something that shouldn't be ignored. Again, like some of the things that Pete mentioned. So you must learn to get a handle on your own golems first. Now, I'm absolutely clear. What I'm also saying is we don't have to go into a world dripping with honey love in the process to fix the problem. Mostly, we have to recognize them and bind them so they can't do the job against us anymore, even if we've created them ourselves. We are judges, and we must judge righteously, and righteously judge is our job. But consider now, when we have to judge, especially for those who've written their own copy of Holy Law, how much better our judgments will be when we don't have animosity, hate, guilt, finger-pointing, and hypocrisies that limit our true and rightful determinations. How much faster will things work when our own golems aren't in the way? We really could see miraculous instant. We don't need any of the dynamics or emotions to do the job with, and in fact, sometimes they can even be detrimental or a hindrance. And no, the consequences of detriments aren't always immediate. Golems, like babies, can and will grow. Okay, so dealing with golems and dealing with the innate is sometimes pretty painful. That, you know, if you've ever done it before, you know what it's like, and we're always trying to make it easier to do. The main reason that it's hard to do is because it hurts to find out that we've done something wrong and the harm we've done to ourselves. We don't like admitting mistakes. We've all carried enormous guilt, and we need a way to get rid of it. Now, you know, for a lot of it, the guilt and stuff went away when we got the proof. But even so, afterwards, we're still affected by some of these things where we still are carrying a lot of guilt. Now, some of the solutions have been mentioned above. But the thing of atonement, the Most High Himself will remove the guilt. But we've got to do our part first. There isn't another way. Now, one of the things that when I wrote down my own copy of Holy Law was with respect to the job of Levites were required to do. It showed me why, when Bobby and I were doing the editing of the AED, why the Most High required it to be Levite before Judah. And of course, it made a lot more sense to me after I figured some of this out, even in our own invocation against the whole of the house of Levi and the whole of the house of Judah. Why? So, when I got to the part of the Day of Atonement when I was writing my own copy, I understood that it's been missing for thousands of years, and there still is the need for atonement. Now, it's understood how Emmanuel paid an incredible penalty for us to be able to access the kingdoms of heaven. Now, while all of this is true, there is still something about atonement and the absolute need for it to happen. When I asked Bobby about it, he said, if everybody does everything right, the Most High will remove the guilt. Now, remember, we're amateur licensed flea bites that's doing the job or can carry out the procedure, but we do have something even better. We've got getting oriented about Bobby in the process. So, what we need to do is get everybody to write down their own copy of Holy Law. There is a need for everybody to get inside their innate, and there's still a need to learn what we need to learn about whatever it is to get the atonement. And I do want to go back to that original quote that I started from, Son of Fire, Son of Fire. This is the day of great opening of the ancient secret which I ordered to be sealed until the time appointed. So let them among the Acherians, those being true and righteous proven knowers of my great testimony, and reveal unto them as you deem appropriate. Teach them first and always. Failure is of their own doing. Seek the innate for cause and reason. Delay is the law in action. Removing barriers that long ago that must be overcome with force and applied energies. Have you not already taught them beyond the capability and understanding of the ancient priests and mystery schools? Yet Tar himself is envious of your opinions, and those in the days of Joseph were not so able. Well, finally, I'd like to say one more thing and then turn it back over to Bobby. The other day I was talking to a friend, and we were discussing where the safest place on the planet to be is. Other than, of course, an Eternal Refuge, we're going to be living in the nation. There's no place on the planet where the air, water, or land hasn't been impacted by pollution, contamination, and filth. There is no place on the planet to be totally immune from natural disasters like tornadoes, hurricanes, volcanoes, or earthquake storms, and floods. There is no place to be absolutely safe from the asteroids or other outside the planetary closed environment. There's no place to be absolutely immune from disease. What about crime? There's no place that we can escape the wars and the rumors of wars. In fact, we're doing some of these ourselves. There's no place to be safe from the Nephilim and the destruction they are going to impose on the planet and world depopulation. Underground, unless they have the spiritual development, they will kill one another through their own goings. That brings us to where the only safe place on the planet is to be, and that is to be an Acherian and the great testimony of it. Thanks, Bobby. And that's where I am.
Are there any questions?
Yes, I have one.
Alright.
Back in the day, Kitty was saying something of be, do, and have. Is this very similar to it?
It's almost identical.
That's what I thought.
See, before you can take care of a problem, you got to realize you got one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a one section in the Dale Carnegie course of how to win friends and influence people that is worth 10,000 times the price of the course. It's called How to Stop Worrying and Start Thinking. And it's exactly the same thing, all you've done, just a little simpler. Probably for copyright reasons. You've got a problem, okay? Now that you recognize the problem, here's how Dale Carnegie says to be it. And it is not in conflict with anything you've heard tonight. So what is the worst case scenario that can happen with this problem? The absolute worst. Well, whatever that is, you accept that as the actual condition that you're working from. Now, what do you do about it? Well, suddenly, that you recognize and see the problem, you're taking responsibility for it, you're owning it, and then you're doing something about it. Just like Pete said, not a bit different in all three philosophies. What we have to do now, let's bring it home to the experience for a minute. We do invocations sometimes for weeks on end. Oh, we see good handprints. No question about that. But we ought to be able to take a nation like China and riddle it with earthquakes and never shake the tea in Mongolia. But we would have to have our act together, everybody acting in unison, on the same page, knowing where the hell China is, what we're doing to it, why, what have we got going for us, to do the thing, put it together in one good vision. And it should be as simple as dissolving a cloud. Well, what the hell's in a cloud? What? Thick enough that you can see it. Well, okay, getting rid of that is a little bit simpler than putting an earthquake in China. But it doesn't mean we can't do it and do it just as fast. But we do have to have our act together.
Bobby?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to add one more thing to you. Now, tonight, Diane and I did a little bit of a job. Bobby told us something to do, told me something to do, and I got my part. Diane got her part. And what it was to get a candle that was used in an invocation process, and I got the remaining leavings of some of the incense and stuff that I've used. Anyway, tonight, what she and I did is we built a fire to bind all of the golems that we could. And I'd really like for Diane to tell you a little bit more about what happened in this process. You know, you get a kick out of it.
Well, somebody obviously didn't like being burned.
The fire got out of control, and it actually jumped out of the thing. I lit me on fire. My right foot was burning. I was engulfed in it, my right foot. I flipped off my shoe. It was still burning. Shiloh ran and grabbed something and put it on my foot to smother out the fire. And of course, the fire was still going outside of the container. I had grabbed the hose, ran out there. Of course, the fire was actually spreading. It was water. So I ran inside and I got the, once I was out, I got the fire extinguisher and put it the rest of the way out. But somebody was pretty damn angry that we were burning them up. And what it had to do was with foam. But nothing that, I'm fine. No, I touched the fire. My shoe got a little singed. My sock has no evidence of any burn mark at all. None. I was not burned. And even though the fire engulfed my right foot, I don't have a single burn on me.
I have a question.
Sure.
What do you do with candles that only burn down the center?
Okay. That takes sort of a little bit of doing. Not much, but a little. What you need to do in that case, and especially if you don't have an outside where you can burn them or a fireplace that you can burn in, they get a little bit rambunctious. So what you have to do with that is take the candle itself, and I always just put mine in a pot upside down so that I can get the wax in a pretty good chunk, and let it, just put it on the stove and let the water boil so that glass gets hot enough to melt the wax loose, and just dump it out. Then let the wax chill, break all the wax loose, and just take it out of the jars that way. But if you can also, if you've got a fire, you can just take the thing upside down, put it on a log that you're going to burn, because it's going to do that, and then that wax will start running out all across that log instead of onto the ground or something. But always make sure that you put enough wood up around that thing, because that glass will burst, and sometimes it'll explode. It'll just blow all to hell. Fortunately, Diane has a big cauldron type thing with a nice shield and so forth. I would not try putting it in a barbecue.
Okay, so in other words, once I can get the wax loose, then I can dispose of it?
Oh,
okay.
Once you get it out of
I think what she's... Now, you still need to burn it after you get it out of it.
Yeah, you still need to burn it. You can't just take it out and throw it away. You still need to burn the damn thing. But
okay, unfortunately, the wick has gone down. I can't even get the darn wick to light.
Well, that's probably one of those great candles they made to make damn sure you could never get rid of them. I have a bunch of them that I've gotten from the Covenant, tried that. And I put them in a big outdoor barbecue that I built. Now let me tell you, it took 2 days to burn that bitch up. But once you can get it out, then you can take other candle wicks. Just put it in a dish of some kind and on something or in a sink where it's not going to catch the house afire. And use other wicks for it to get it started. And then just melt the whole damn thing down. Or melt it down and put you some wicks in it as you go. For a while they used to make candles, I don't know whether they still do or not, that had 3 and 4 wicks on them.
Yes, but no more. You can get wicks at Michael's, can't you? Is that correct, Sharon? Bobby? Yes.
The only way you can probably even get them cheaper is at Hobby Lobby.
Okay.
Would there be a problem with just taking the wax, putting it in a paper bag, and throwing it on fire in your fireplace?
No, not at all.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, the most critical part is that you have to zero it. You have to make sure that whatever was in there, and you won't remember, but you tell it all, whatever it was, that its job is done. It's finished. And then go ahead and burn the wax out. Because otherwise, you're just going to change the going from that one to a more spiritual thing. Of course, there is a way to get rid of them, but I have to go and find the old man to do it. And I don't think the Romans are up to burning down the United States. But there are some others. Some others that would love to. So I don't want to have to do that unless I can do it where we're cleaned up. We do an atonement for the Aquarians, and we're home free, and the rest of the world has got a problem.
Okay, what about the ones that you previously had thrown away?
I'll have to run them down. That's the ones we'll get rid of in atonement. I mean, can you
tell me the ones for your personal, the ones that you had previously had used in your own personal wind, and you have thrown them away? What about those that are discarded?
That's the ones I'll have to run down. They're like a spirit. Got to do that.
Okay, because I've done that too.
Yeah, that's what happened in Jerusalem when the Romans finally decided to obey the Most High and burn the damn place down, which was what he was going to do with it, because Peter went up and asked him to clean the place. Well, he cleaned it, all right. But there's a vision that I would like for all of you to think about. Whenever somebody is smoking a cigarette, sometimes they're thinking about the job, trying to de-stress or just get a mind break on something. But the vast majority don't. They've all got some kind of a case of the ass for somebody. Justified or unjustified doesn't matter. Now, how many bazillion of those do you think are floating around just in the cigarette cigar? where are most of them? Most of them you would think would be in the garbage pits. That's who they would be. But if they weren't zeroed properly, what the hell do you think would happen if I had the old man cream all of those? So I'm going to try to limit him to just getting rid of ours. That's the occurrence. We've got enough beer we can probably pour it on the fire and put out that one.
I'm waiting left here.
Let the bitch burn. I'm second emotion maker.
Gerald, did you like that story?
Yes.
But that's the thing we need to do is get rid of these. And then we'll get a day of atonement for everybody once it's cleaned up. And for those who think they're going to make a fool out of me or a liar out of me, I want you to do that. Just make sure that I have instructions where you want your head set. Because your ass is going to belong to the old man.
You know, we ought to make a plaque for that and have it on everyone's wall so that it's a reminder. And then the last line on that would say, "Don't jackass."
If you saw the string of my head officers for disobedience and jackass and everything else, and looked at them, I've got head marshal generals. You know, the old man is a very strict disciplinarian. He says, "Do this, you do that." He says, "Don't do that, you don't do that." It's pretty pretty cut and dry. I guess that's why I try to keep all of my lessons as simple as I can, to make damn sure that there's no misunderstanding. Anyone with ordinary sense can generally catch at least the better part of it on the first pass. I don't mind clarifying anything that we have to make sure of. There are no such things as stupid questions. There's only stupid people that don't ask questions. Of course, you've got the idiot element that's always looking for some chink in your armor. Those I don't pay any attention to. Now, before we close out, we've got some hell to raise. Everybody up on the death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood?
It's something we gotta do, so we gotta do it.
Okay, we've got enough. Did Andrea get back? Ouch. Did Andrea get back in?
Yes, I did.
Okay, honey. Now that we've got a pretty good company, some of them, since we got into trying to clean our own house so that the old man doesn't look at us like something that ought to be squashed too. We've been doing chants just like we did with the hell balls. To keep someone chanting, keep us on target, keep that energy up. Well, we've advanced a little bit, and now we do a chant split up in about half and half. And one of the teams does the chant, the other one does the invocation. And it works like a charm. And you chant through to the 1, 2, 3 break when you turn everything loose. So the chanters, I've got a good one on this one. You're going to love it. It's just so complex and what have you. No one's going to understand it. The immediate death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's about as confusing as we get one. That's the chant for tonight.
I want to be a teacher.
You want to be in a chant? Okay,
I can't get to it in here, so, but I like the chant.
Okay, not a problem.
Bobby, is this going to take care of the black Muslims too?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
they're a member of the Martin Brotherhood, their ass is gone.
Okay.
Now, all the problems that you have in the Middle East, that's constantly blowing one another up and all this horseshit, I wish I knew who they all were and give them all a stick of dynamite and say, knock your lights out, you know, and get rid of them that way. Trouble is, they hurt innocent people. They have no qualms about doing anything to get in political power, then they murder everybody in sight. They were the ones that put the Ayatollah Khomeini, as we called him, into office after our idiots put in the Shah of Iran and threw him out. Well, he needed thrown out, but the Iranian people did not need the Khomeini. That's about what we're going to get to here. They're going to do their damnedest in every city or every nation in the Middle East. Everything that's under Muslim law, they're going to do their worst at it. So, we're going to put a stop to them by getting rid of them. We're going to save the Nephilim some trouble. So, Kitty, you're going to be on chat. Shalom, is your phone open?
It is now.
Okay. Make the assignment. Who are you going to have to read tonight?
Okay. Let me find out who has the invocation in front of them. Please check in. I do.
I do also.
I do also, Shippel. Eric's got it too.
Coco and Andrew, this one.
He has it.
Okay.
I'll be on mute. I'll take the outer parameter. And you may fire when ready. Set your companies and go.
Okay. Ernie, do you want to be a cancer on the invoking team? Okay. Dave, you're comfortable with your job?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Celeste, do you have it down? Immediate death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood. Is Celeste in? Okay. Gerald, do you got the chant down? Do you have the invocation in front of you?
No invocation other than chant.
Okay, then I'll get you on chant. Andrew?
Yes?
Which one do you want?
I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, then I'll put you on the chat. You got the chat down?
Yes, I got it written down in front of me.
Okay, let me see. Okay, so let's see. The kid, I'll have you take the chat, the invocation, okay?
Okay.
And the invokers are Pete, Diane, Patrick, and Coco. Everybody else on the camp. Oh, Eric, sorry, Eric. My apologies. Eric, you'll go on the invoking.
Okay.
Who said that?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait. Okay, so I want to confirm. Pete, Diane, Patrick, Coco, and Eric on invoke. Shalom, Kitty, Ernie, Dave, and if Celeste is still there. Celeste, Gerald, Andrea, and Danny. I did get everybody, correct?
Yep.
Okay, Patrick, you may proceed.
Okay. Yishama Delia, on our authority, assume Deol Umanga, all energies hear us. All creation hear us. Blue Source, man your battle station. The Koreans on my command, circle up for simultaneous ascension into the plains of heaven. Hathor. Hestera. Hestera. Idea. Hakama. Hosanna. Akurian, charge yourselves of the great elements. Akasa. Air. Fire. Water. Earth. Chanters begin. Akurian, create a spirit manifestation and send it into the sun, charging with the forces of black fire and sun's energies as it can absorb. Stand it away from you at a safe distance and charge it with all the forces and energies. We will begin. Akasa, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation of the death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of all room to exist. Air, the East Wind Apollodes, Service Wind Maria, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation of the death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of motion and life. Fire. The South Wind Note, Third Wind Lite, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation of the death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of all expansion and growth. Water, the West Wind Zephyros, Seven Wind Skylon, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation of the death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of all control, authority, and credibility. Earth, the North Wind Boreas, Seven Wind Kaikias, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation of the death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of all continuance and existence. Enter now into the spirit manifestation of death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood and immediately accomplish all intent therein. Akurian, repeat with me. By the righteous powers and holy authorities of my own, I am conscious. I, Patrice Murphy Siler, a true and righteous daughter of Akuria. By order of the Most High Lord of Spirits, Alaya Ashahai, in whose service the true and righteous Akurians present this invocation of testimony. Holy Seraphim, Holy Cherubim, bear us witness, archangels, great elements, winds and angels, we command you now, apply all powers and forces to enforce and end the continuance of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hear the word of the true and righteous, and you shall deny us not. Archangel Raphael, Holy Bahaliel, Holy Sarabodes, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of any and all access to and any and all use and application of the great element of air. All powers of the East Wind Apollodes, the Servant Wind Urea, and life and motion for now and for everlasting. Archangel Michael, Holy Nathriel, Holy Gabriel, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of any and all access to, and any and all use and application of the great element of fire. All powers of the south wind note, the servant wind mite, and all consciousness and expansion for now and for everlasting. Archangel Gabriel, Holy Emil, Holy Hamiel, we command you now to charge and energize the spirit manifestation to deprive the Muslim Brotherhood of any and all access to and any and all use and application of the great element of water. All powers of the West Wind Zephyros, the Servant Wind Skyron, and direction and control for now and for everlasting. Archangel Uriel, Holy Beli, Holy Forlock, we command you now to energize, to charge and energize this sphere of manifestation to supply the Muslim Brotherhood of any and all access to and any and all use and application of the great element of earth. All powers of the North Wind Boreas, the Servant Wind Tycheus, and all manifestations and permanence for now and for everlasting. Archangel Remiel, ruler of all the bindings, we command you to charge and energize the spirit manifestation to apply all powers of binding to bind the Muslim Brotherhood, all their agendas, all their technologies, all their assets, all their invocations, all their momentum, powers and abilities, both spiritual and physical, to abject and irreparable failure that they exist no more anywhere in creation. Archangel Raguel, ruler of all the loosening, we command you now to apply all powers of loosening to loosen all forces and momentum, serving to break, eliminate, and destroy the Muslim Brotherhood from having any powers of whatsoever nature with respect to any and all banks, financial institutions, stock markets, commerce, economies, and all media of all nations, global, national, and regional, that the Muslim Brotherhood be destroyed and totally exterminated for now and for everlasting. Archangel Zerachiel, first guardian of all the holy anointed witnesses in their generation, communicator between the holy altar and the Ark of the Covenant of the Most High, we command you now to apply all powers and forces to protect and defend all true and righteous Akurians. Akurians, on my command, we will descend from Hosanna. Bringing with you the fully energized and charged spirit manifestation. Hosanna. Harkama. Idea. Hestera. Hestera. Hathor. Akurians, on my command, circle the earth around the equator at a radical distance of 8,000 miles out from the concentric center. Enlarge the spirit manifestations to cover and penetrate the entire earth, equal in size to the hell balls already in place around it, using the controlling energy of the higher planes. Akurians, repeat with me. Holy Denez, guard of the main gates of the East Wind Purel, main gates of the West Wind Duriel, main gates of the South Wind Albion, and main gates of the North Wind Yaduga, we command you now to energize the spirit manifestation of Akurian demand by opening all the gates of all the winds, that this spirit manifestation of Akurian demand be fully empowered against the Muslim Brotherhood, that even the gates of hell cannot stand against it. Spirit manifestation of the death and destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood, be you now composed of all we have commanded. Be you now about all we have commanded to accomplish the immediate death and immediate destruction of the Muslim Brotherhood and all members and supporters thereof. occurrence, merger spirit manifestation into one super manifestation containing all the powers, energies, forces, and intentions we have commanded. On my count, release our spirit manifestations. 3, 2, 1, break! Aquarian, pause up and maintain a spirit link. Lone, Casalata, Cisnallon, Bustat. Secure your spirit in your physical body and make a new body of light that will descend into the heavens to clean off and recharge. Hathor. 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 Idea. Hathama. Hosanna. Recharge of the great elements. Akasha. Air. Fire. Water, earth, will descend. Hosanna, Hakama, Idea, Hestera, Hastera, Hathor. Insert your source body of light into your physical body. Blue sword, stand down.
Now that one worked last time.
I'll think to that.
Disaster relief should there be a natural disaster, which none of us have, nobody's complaining about that one. But I want the money to go for that. I don't want it to be like we just had this fiasco in Haiti, you know. But yes, there's hell to pay on that one. In case I miss a day or two, I'm having severe problems with my hearing. I don't know what I'm going to do about it. Probably go get a set of hearing aids at the VA. But in case we miss that, do this one for a night or two anyhow, and then rotate between it and the Truth and Prosperity. I'll try to get Prosperity updated a little bit too. But this has been a very, very good one. Very good session tonight. Are there any final questions before we begin checking out? Well, excellent. Everybody knows everything I need them to know. Well, we do have some extra traffic, that I can tell you, but I don't know how many. And some of them are chain traffic, which is just fine with me. I want them to all know what we got in store for them, but they can't do a goddamn thing about it. And with that, Joe Ruth, you'll start falling out one at a time. I'll record the rest of the clips and we'll have a tiger count on them.
Okay, the three count. Thanks, Chief.
Good night, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Les.
Night, Ron.
Yeah. Thanks, Kitty. Mark.
Gerald, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Gerald, and somebody else. Andrea. Thanks, Andrea. 25. Coco Lounge. Thanks, Coco.
Eric Bell, thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Beat out.
Thanks, honey.
Ready out.
Thanks, honey.
I didn't hear any, or they
triple
go out.
I didn't hear them either. Thanks.